Welcome to Androids and Assets, a weekly podcast about the political economy of all of our favorite science fiction and fantasy series. Join us as we investigate the hidden meanings in fantastic worlds and what the future can tell us about today. We upload new episodes every Monday. We hope you enjoy it.
Hello, my name is Steven.
And I'm Marshall.
And welcome to the podcast. We have not yet named it at this time, so you're going to have heard the title. You're going to have knowledge we don't have because you've just heard the title and the title card. Why am I disclosing this? So today we're talking about Game of Thrones, that most beloved franchise of murder, torture, and softcore pornography.
My three favorite
and the games they're held within. All right. So what are we talking? We're talking about the least titular of those things, which is currency.
Currency,
money.
One of my favorite topics.
It makes that if you know all that sex and murder is just really a way to lubricate the circulation of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? It's all about those
money,
those gold coins,
the social lubricant.
We're mincing metaphors here.
Wait, what did you say was the lubricant?
I said war. The war was the lubricant to facilitate the passage of money.
Oh man, I thought it was the other way around. I thought money was the lubricant that kept wars going.
Oh boy. Uh oh. Well, whatever. You're the economist.
You know what? Money can be a lot of things to be different people, and I think that's what we're that's key to what we're getting at today. Money is a thing. And it can be basically whatever you want it to be. Maybe.
So it's like a song of ice and fiat currency.
Yeah. Or maybe it should have been a song of ice and fiat currency. And their economy would have flowed a lot more nicely.
Okay. So maybe we just start off with what is money in Game of Thrones? It could be anything we want it to be, but in the world of Game of Thrones, it definitely is one thing.
It is. It's gold. Money is gold. I don't even know if they do maybe talk about silver sometimes.
Yeah.
They
say coin a lot.
They say coin a lot. Yeah. But I think primarily it refers to gold and silver.
Because the Lannisters have a gold mine.
Which
is how they pay or do they? Oh, spoiler alert. We do not care about spoilers. If you need to watch the entirety of the Game of Thrones series up until this point, we'll wait. Anyway, so gold.
Gold. Gold, what is their currency? Do they call it dragons? Crowns? It's not important. They are a system of metalism. They only base their money off of the value of another intrinsic good. If you don't have gold, you don't have nothing. The treasury is based off of how much gold the king holds at any given time. Great houses only have value because of something they produce that they can sell for gold and the gold that they keep in their vaults. Everyone is only rich based on the amount of gold that they have. There is no other good that really contributes to being counted in your wealth. It doesn't really matter how much wine you produce, it matters how much you can sell it for and get gold. There is the Iron Bank across the Narrow Sea that just has presumably mountains of gold in a basement somewhere that they lend out to people and then take back at exorbitant, usurious rates. Gold is everywhere and nobody deviates from this in any way.
So the only paper money that exists is these loans, then, which are theoretically, at least in theory, backed by gold. They're securities for gold.
But I don't even think that it's a paper loan so much. The paper is only to say this is how much you'll pay it back at. But I think the loan actually happens by them shipping gold across the Narrow Sea and giving it to you in bags.
Okay.
And then you then distribute that gold however you see fit.
Right, so if you're House Lannister, you're using that to pay your armies and buy supplies and...
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you're Robert Baratheon. Wow, I forgot his name for a minute there. If you're Robert Baratheon, you're paying it for whores, for wine, and for parties. Which...
Also hunting.
I mean, doesn't seem like such a bad use of gold in my books, really. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so gold is everything in Westeros. So why is this a... So how does this... So, you know, as an economist, how does this shape your thinking about...
So for me, this is interesting and frustrating because they talk about the treasury being bankrupt, that the crown of Westeros has no power anymore because it has no money, which, I mean, one, I question just because if they're not levying taxes anymore, then that's a problem. If they are levying taxes, then they should at least have some money flowing somehow. And maybe they've just... racked up so much debt.
Can the treasury bear such expense?
I'll have to borrow it. The Lannisters will accommodate, I expect. We already owe Lord Tywin 3 million gold. What's another 80,000?
Are you telling me the crown is 3 million in debt?
I'm telling you the crown is 6 million in debt.
That they're using all of their inflows of money to pay the interest on their loan.
Yeah, see, the debt tray is wider than... Sorry, we're referencing a very opaque YouTube about Japan's debt crisis, or the compare of debt to...
Don't look at
the size of trays. Never mind.
It's an inside joke.
Yeah.
So the crown has no money. But by virtue of still being the crown, people still give it people still defer to it in terms of law, and in terms of just being a feudal system.
At least under Robert Baratheon. Yeah.
Yes, under Robert Baratheon they still deferred to the crown, even though it was broke, and they knew that, you know, any person on the street had more money than the king did. They still deferred to him as king. They would still loan him money to keep operating this system. So the Lannisters gave him money. I think there was intimations that various other groups.
Loans. I mean, from a historical perspective, in any feudal system, the king levies taxes on the vassals and the lords, who then may often subcontract that out to other people, who then collect the taxes, and everyone takes their cut until whatever amount of taxes due finally reaches the king.
Yeah.
And this is kind of how things have worked time immemorial.
And so I'm not saying that they couldn't have gone into debt. Absolutely. They certainly could have gone into debt. He was spending like a drunk sailor and would not have had money. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't have money, because there's another idea that's sort of in opposition to metalism, saying that the money we use is based off of the inherent value of gold and we use it as a system of exchange and barter, is chartalism. And the chartalism is more that... because you're levying taxes, you can levy those taxes however you want. So you can establish like a fiat currency, like most modern economies have. You have a dollar, and it's the Canadian dollar or the American dollar or the British pound, and it's just a piece of paper or plastic, depending where you live.
Cotton.
Could be cotton, could be plastic.
Oh boy.
It could be electronic zeros and ones in a bank somewhere. No actual physical representation of it anymore. But it still has value, because when the state says you need to pay taxes, we accept our dollar. You automatically have to find a way to get those dollars to pay your taxes, or you're going to go to jail. You're going to go to jail.
You're going to face censure.
There will be problems, potentially for you, if you don't pay your taxes. And you do have to pay them in... the system of currency in the state that you live. So Robert Baratheon could have said, I'm going to create Baratheon bucks. And it's just pieces of paper. I'm going to get maesters to just print them out. It's got my face printed on them. And I sign each of them individually so that somebody can't forge a whole bunch of Baratheon bucks and just get rich. And then say, I demand that you pay... all of your taxes have to be paid to me in Baratheon bucks. And then this would sort of grant him the ability to expand or decrease the amount of currency that he needs ever at a time. And sure, there'd be rampant inflation, but there already is rampant inflation in there. I mean, To bribe a gold cloak went from five gold coins to 15 gold coins over a series of couple of years.
300% in 5 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Rampant inflation.
That's Korea. That's like Japan 1950s inflation.
That might also be because Cersei's queen and the gold cloaks are facing a higher risk, so they've increased their prices. But that's still inflation,
well,
and that's ridiculous. So we know that there's gold in... There has to be gold in Westeros still, though. There's, like, the gold hasn't all left the country, right? Even if you're spending it all
or
on...
Maybe it, well, I think the intimation is, like, when we find out the Lannister gold mines are empty, right? After, in the height of the Civil War, and the system of trade has also been completely disrupted, you find out that actually, once you deduct the debt, there might not be any gold in Westeros.
Yes, so potentially if you could gather up all of the gold that anybody has in Westeros and use it to pay off all of your debts, you might come out to a net zero and Westeros has no gold anymore. That's going to be a thing. Doesn't mean your economy has to stop moving. It just means you need to find a different system of trade and move away from this barter of, I'll give you some gold if you give me some chickens. Because that just isn't going to work when there's no gold anymore.
You can barter other things for chickens.
You can barter other
Baratheon
things for chickens.
Bucks.
But Baratheon bucks is going to be the simplest thing, because you know those Baratheon bucks have value, because the crown says they have value, and you can always give them to the crown to pay your crown debts. And that's sort of the value that they have. It's not that you can exchange them to the crown for something else, it's that you can exchange them to the crown for paying off what you owe the crown.
Right. And this is actually a very relevant, this weirdly, despite being a story about, well, I mean, a fictional place, but about an economic system that's well over 800 years old, or 700, a couple hundred years old.
Capitalism?
Like a medalist economies.
Oh, medalist is...
When do we transition out of
Rome
medalist?
Even had...
No, when do we transition away from medalist economies? Like, when did Chartism come in? Like, the 17th century? 16th, 17th?
There were aspects of Chartism going back all the way to Rome.
Sure.
There were some, you know, you had to pay in Roman coin.
Sure.
So even though it was still a gold coin, it had to be a Roman coin that wouldn't just take gold bullion. But really, we've only really transitioned away from it, I mean, after the Second World War.
Okay. Right, so that
we
actually...
had a gold standard. It got suspended in the first
closed.
War, in the first Great War. There was a suspension of the gold standard, but then the United States insisted on going back to it right after the war, which sort of forced everyone else to follow along. And then in the Second World War, we realized just how crazy this was, suspended it again, and never really got back to a gold standard. We started to get to a floating gold standard, and that was weird, and we had we kept devaluing the amount of gold you would get for your bucks until eventually it was like, you know what? Let's just cut this. We're going to cut that last apron string.
Right, so we're actually only maybe like 30, 40 years of non...
Yeah, pure fiat. Of pure fiat currency.
Right. And so I mean, like, obviously, I'm not saying that the reason Game of Thrones is popular is because it evokes a medalist economy. It harkens back to a medalist economy. But it is something that people are talking about. This is a talking point in U.S. elections. It's like, you know, it's actually things that are being bandied about. It's part of libertarian agenda.
If you hear anybody talking about Bitcoin, and they're a proponent of Bitcoin, they'll probably tell you that fiat currencies are inherently dangerous and are a way for the state to control you.
Right. So cryptocurrencies are also a sort of neo-metalist
absolutely
approach. So this is a very common thing, and I think part of it is, I mean, I'm not, again, this is not causal, but I'm saying, like, it's part of our hearkening back to this brutal metalist time. It tickles something in us. So I think maybe there is some anxiety. People do have some anxiety about currency, and like we talked about in the past about, like, you know, the economy being the boogeyman, the economy being the bad guy. Like,
and they say that, that's, I think, a few times in Game of Thrones. The economy's in trouble.
Mm-hmm. No, they have a civil war.
Well, yeah,
that's the problem. Yeah, like, I mean, the treasury being empty is not such a huge issue. I mean,
there at some point the Lannisters are going around and just burning fields of wheat.
Yeah.
Just to deprive it from their enemies.
Yeah.
That is a problem in an economy.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah. But it's not economy.
But it's not the economy that was in problem, having a problem. It's that someone came in and burned your field.
Right. Someone actually took wheat out of that economy through destruction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think probably, yeah, they face some economic problems, but farmers are a pretty hardy folk, and they're going to gather up some wheat from somewhere else and replant that field again later and just keep on going. It's going to hurt them, but they're not going to just end. The economy isn't just over. They're not going to be, oh crap, I can't borrow money from the crown now. How am I ever going to afford crop insurance?
Yeah, but I need to pay for my subscription on the GPS on my surf. Well, certainly agronomic practices have changed quite a bit. But so we have this kind of situation where people are harking back to this, and I guess it kind of boils down to this, why do we love metal? Why are we hooked on metal? And why are we gobbling stuff? And this ties into some of my historical conjectures that I kind of put into this. It's a narrative about monarchy, you know, and there's stuff about the divine rights of kings and all this dynastic struggle, ostensibly.
Yeah, yeah, right? Absolutely.
The families fighting over who gets to be Trump, I mean king. you know, you get this, which, again, it very much is reminiscent of the previous election. You know, wealthy families trying to decide which wealthy family is going to be in charge. And, this is clearly resonating with people, I guess. And so, this question is, and I think Game of Thrones, and again, this is not to impute any motives onto George R. R. Martin or anyone, but it's the fact that it's connecting, I think, is because people very much feel like maybe they are increasingly in this situation. They're increasingly feeling that they are subjects in a monarchical situation, and that perhaps, or even the fact that they are more open to the fact of something that is, or they feel that their government alienated from their government sufficiently to maybe want something maybe if we had somebody who had to prove themselves by killing a bunch of people at war, that might be better than the current crop of politicians we have now.
True.
You know, and
though I would think that there's a good number of our current politicians that did kill people while at war.
That's true. Yeah, that's a, yeah. Or at least they
claim to.
They pointed to 2004 called. They want their electoral talking point back. presidential
gosh.
Burn.
I think people. Okay, I think there's probably a couple of reasons that people decide to use metal as a currency when they're writing stories. One, it sounds historical. It just makes people seem less advanced than we are now.
Right. So if you think that happened in the 50s, they're using coins.
Yeah, right? and people don't even... I mean, people don't think about... using, having the gold standard in the 50s, because they had the good old American green,
sure,
back then too.
Yeah.
You know, we transitioned to a system of using produced currency with a gold standard, and that still was a sort of a system of using metal as your base without ever having to carry around gold coins, because that gets heavy. That gets heavy quick. So, and also with inflation, it gets dangerous. What does an ounce of gold sell for these days? $800,000? And an ounce is not a lot. So, either it gets heavy because you're carrying around a lot of metal with you. If you want to buy a house, you're carrying pounds and pounds of metal just to, buy a house. Or you're carrying as many small threads of gold as you can so that you're not going to get robbed from that $1,000 coin that you're carrying. We didn't use coins. We haven't used real gold coins for a long time. So the fact that people do use real gold coins, it just makes them seem old. It gives it that old-fashioned, feudalistic vibe.
Yeah. Right.
It's
a texture almost.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it would be weird if they just pulled out, like, pieces of paper with some of them, or pieces of tin.
Sure. That had so you think it's just for narrative reasons. It's,
yeah.
So there's, you don't think there's any political agenda going on here? There's no, like...
No, I don't think it's a deliberate political agenda. Mm-hmm. But like anything, mm-hmm. whenever you make these choices, it is political, and it does reflect on your beliefs and your systems of understanding.
Mm-hmm. And the notion that this is part of that time of... that gold is a part of that time of your... and a part of that monarchy,
yeah,
and
exactly,
that
exactly.
feudalism and this arbitration through right of battle,
and it would seem ahistorical if they were using coins,
sure.
that weren't gold, which I don't know why. Like a tin coin would be the same as a
sure.
gold coin.
Sure.
You just say you're paying in whatever.
Yeah, and so in this case, I think, I think the resonance comes in, is that because of the gold standard, there's this massive economic problem which is driving, or which is part and parcel of this larger political problem, which is literally destroying lives.
Yeah,
as in
absolutely.
Ending them. So you know, and we have this sense of that people who also feel their lives are destroyed by an economic force.
For sure.
But as we kind of delve into that problem, we actually start to realize that, again, the economic problem is very easy to solve with, but is more easily solved with, you know, with consensus and peace and politics and more sort of conventional approaches to money management, and less about actually the individual who is wearing a particular hat on a particular day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I would believe that.
And this sort of drives, I think, the discourse of social and political change, and kind of how Game of Thrones reifies in us. It harkens back to something old. Because it's something we also feel we understand.
Yeah.
And it resonates with us, and it connects with us, and that's what makes it great. And that's also what makes it part of a hegemony of perspective about the problems we face, that only serves to further reify our, you know, and increase the ease with which we race to these militaristic solutions. We race to political grand narratives, and things just get more polarized and more extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as we, you know, we regress very intensely, things that would have been unconscionable, you know, like these fascist riots occurring in the United States, things that were unconscionable, hopefully unconscionable, unless I really misread 20 years ago, which I might have, 30 years ago, things 50 years ago would have been unconscionable, let's be safe, are now actually becoming common day occurrences, and people are thinking, well, maybe it wasn't so bad, maybe fascism wasn't so bad, people are saying.
Yep.
And that is in part allowed to happen because there's the belief that, yeah, these political grand narratives and these economic grand narratives are leading the show.
Game of Thrones, like most of these sweeping epics, focuses on a seemingly large, but actually quite a small cast of characters who are all born into wealthy families, who the hardship that they face is that they got beat up by their sword training master today, not whether they were able to eat today. Even Jon Snow, who, you know, says, oh, I was never part of that family and it was so hard for me growing up.
He still benefited from its privilege.
Yeah, he was... Like, so these are incredibly privileged characters who are deciding the fate of... Well, the population of that world is really subject to debate.
Yeah.
But thousands. We'll say at least thousands of people who are... Their fate is being decided by a small handful of 20 people who have
really petty beefs with each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it would be really strange to see someone paying with dollar bills in a time when it's like the monarchy still controls things. Even though in reality that's not very different from our system now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We still have monarchies all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And those monarchies often have fiat currencies. And we have wealthy people in political systems that are democratic, but are still dynastic.
Because there's no questioning the fact there's a question of which oligarch should be in control.
Right.
Not should we have a system which is designed to mediate which oligarch is in control.
Exactly.
And
you see soldiers when they do talk to soldiers in Game of Thrones who say, well, you know, I came out not so much to support one person or another, so much as I came out because I would get a slightly better paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And they never once seem to think I could turn this sword against the person who's giving me a pretty shitty paycheck
mm-hmm.
in exchange for my life.
Yeah.
It's always like, yeah, well, of course I'm going to fight for one of the great houses. How could I not?
Sure. Yeah. But there's this notion that the soldiery, the people who actually do the fighting, are have more in common with each other than they do with the people who are directing them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a better foundation for a solution to their environment.
Exactly.
To what's going on than actually what is being mediated. But again, this reflects our imagination is so confined to these narratives of oligarchs and dynasties. We like to think we're above all that. We transcend all that. But I think it tickles us because we're not above it at all. Because it describes our situation. Because it's...
Because we're living it every
day.
It's
ostensibly accurate, yeah. And so, it's part of just us all settling into our bleak, neo-monarchist, alt-right nightmare zone.
Music from this episode has been from An Ant and An Atom. Thanks so much for your support.